All right, welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to Modern Manhood Cold Takes. My name is Hernan Villegas. I am your co-host for Cold Takes. Usually, I have my other co-host, Veronica, here, but she has something called schoolwork, which I don't know. I don't know what that is, but I haven't done schoolwork in ages, so whatever. So we got the executive director of Next Gen Men, Jake. Jake, how are you? Yeah, exactly.
I brought my own rap air horn.
I think you brought a soundboard.
I knew you would love that. Yeah, what a nerd Veronica is, right? And
bettering herself for society and in community nonsense.
It's not like curiosity is an Next Gen Men value or anything.
No, not at all. Not at all. Jake, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Yeah. The world is still strange. It's still unexpected. But things are okay here in Vancouver. I heard Alberta has snow. We don't know what that is over here. Our grass is green. It's gorgeous. And yeah.
This is so ridiculous. This is Alberta nonsense being spoken right now. I know we have usually a very Alberta podcast, usually very Edmonton podcast, but yeah, you living in BC is like a little jealousy speaking up for my
just
my,
you know, for my, throw in some salt salt water.
Yeah, okay. exactly. Oh boy. All right. Well, I don't know how to transition to this, but I just wanted to let you know that Modern Manhood is brought to you by Next Gen Men and the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown and community supported. So if you want to support Next Gen Men in redefining and undefining what it means to be a man, head on over to nextgenmen.ca because there's some new stuff going on. Jake, you want to let us know about Next Gen Membership?
Next Gen Membership. It is both perfect and awful at the same time.
Everyone loves a good pun. It's all good.
Which, you know, that's Next Gen Men's marketing.
Yeah.
Really excited about it. Next Gen Membership, you know, $5, $10, $15, $20 a month. You know, whatever folks want to contribute, all the money goes to supporting our youth programs, which we've also pivoted online. We're running NGM Boys Club for boys in kind of middle school. And so your contribution by becoming a Next Gen member helps them get online with us. But beyond that, there's sweet perks. There's also an online community for adults, people who care about, you know, the next generation of men, modern manhood, breaking the boy code, all the things that we're doing, to, you know, redefine and undefine what it means to be a man. You can find community. We've got about 100 people on there. There's channels on, like, you know, social justice, workplaces, media, sports, you know, whatever you want to, like, talk with people who care about masculinity about, we're talking about it there. Other perks include free tickets to NGM Circle events as a Next Gen member, as well as exclusive discounts on NGM merch, which this includes obviously Cards for Masculinity. And I'll let it be known here first publicly, NGM toques are on the way. Ooh. They've been sold out since last winter. We just talked about the snow.
Nice.
They're on the way. So you can get sweet discounts on that too.
Yes, winter is coming. And yeah, the Next Gen membership has been really good. We've had, and you mentioned it, over about 100 members. And I think that's like, it's been really cool to see and to hear everyone else's contributions to, you know, speaking about gender and masculinity in general. So we're going to talk about one of the topics and one of the membership right away here. Just to kind of give you a glimpse of what's going on in that community. But yeah, make sure you do that. Go over to nextgenmen.ca to make that happen. Also, if you want to support Modern Manhood, you can go on over to our Patreon page and you can hit Modern Manhood Extra. So you can head on over to $3 per month. We'll get you to do that. So it's patreon.com/modernmanpod. All right, Jake, it's been, I think the last time that I got you onto Modern Manhood, we also talked about Donald Trump. So I'm sorry to do this to you. I keep doing this thing again, but we're going to have to do it because I think this, I don't know, like it is going to be a pivot for, so the election is on the 3rd. That's next
election
week.
Is now the
that's, yeah oh that's
the
true
is just the last day to vote
that's right? very true that's very
and,
true
and I think that that's important because you know if we look at some of the early voting numbers the you know the population they're expecting that 165 million Americans will vote, which is 65% of eligible voters, which is the highest turnout since 1908.
That's wild.
So there's a lot at stake.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot at stake. So like, and what I mean to say, like November 3rd is either going to be the end of Donald Trump as the president of the United States. I don't think it'll be the end of his legacy. I think his legacy is going to continue on. Or we're going to get another 4 years of Donald Trump. Like it's one of those things where it's like, it's a big turn point in politics in general. I mean, like it sucks to say that American politics just really takes in as like as the world as like a world politician, like they really like suck in the air of everything else. Actually heard one person on a podcast say, you know what, I feel like the rest of the world should be able to vote on the American presidency because it's so like it informs everything else in politics. So yeah, Trump is it's a big deal, right? So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's about And this is why there's so much at stake, right? You see China and Russia chomping at the bit to try and reclaim some of their global powers. You know, obviously, China, I think we can't deny, has that role on the mm-hmm. stage, but they don't want it just on a capitalist economy. They want to have that global influence as well too, You know, it's kind of hard because in our lifetimes, we don't know anything different, right?
Yeah.
But there, you know, you think a generation prior to us, there was a Cold War, right? Between yeah. Russia and the USA. And then the USA, if we look at, you know, pre-World Wars, you know, they were kind of an emergent power and the UK was on top. And so it's not unprecedented. It's happened before, but it's just unprecedented in our lifetimes, which if anyone has a bingo card for words such as unprecedented, mm-hmm. there you go. You can mark your bingo card.
The new normal. This is very
you just said it, you gave them another bingo yeah, slot.
I know. I'm just trying to get the audience to win here. I wanted to mention as well, like this is something that one of our members posted on Next Gen membership group, that there is a documentary coming out that's already out, I think. It's called The Man Card. It was done by Jackson Katz. He is one of the producers of it. And Jackson Katz, if you follow around, like if you know anything about like masculinity and gender in general, like you, Jackson's cat names will pop up every now and again. He's been very popular, you know, communicating how important it is to think about violence against women specifically. And through
even beyond that, I think his biggest contribution is not that it's violence against women. He is very adamant that it's men's violence against women.
Right? Yes,
and
that's
him
true.
Naming that, I think, has shifted the conversation a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and that's the thing. It's like, but what I'm trying to say is that Jackson Katz has been on the forefront for, I would say, 20 years, maybe even more than that. I think maybe in the 90s. That he's been in like in that kind of role. So he has come out with a new documentary called The Man Card. And so I just wanted to pull some quotes. I haven't seen the documentary, truth be told. And I mentioned on the group, I'm just like, I'm a little like the takes around like Trump and masculinity have been overdone. I think we've kind of all get it. Like if you're online, kind of like, yeah, I get it. I understand. He's a narcissist. We understand this. But I wanted to pull out this quote that Jackson Katz has mentioned. He says that, where was it? Yeah, here it is. So presidential races are always about gender, but the gender they are about is masculinity and men. What do you think about this quote, Jake?
I think it's truthful. I mean, it's we hope that it's not going to be that way moving forward. I mean, like Jacinda Ardern's landslide win in New Zealand gives me a lot of hope that this is shifting. But if we look at this race specifically, you see Trump doing a lot of the strongman, you know, the hegemonic masculinity, the posturing, the you know, I beat coronavirus myself, you know, it's just the flu type thing. Whereas, you know, Joe Biden is still, you know, the strong guy, the strong American male who's, you know, led and it has these leadership qualities, which obviously are masculine. And then, you know, when an opportunity comes in to undermine that masculinity, you know, by him, let's say, having the audacity to love his son and, you know, hold him and kiss him on the forehead, like, you know, how does homophobia slip into like a father-son relationship there, you know? So all of those things, I think, just point to this being a referendum on American masculinity to some extent as well too.
Yeah. And I think that's what Katz mentions here. He says, Katz believes that that one Biden embodies a more complex 21st century manhood that includes empathy and compassion, respect for women and women's rights, and is racially and ethically inclusive. Katz says that Trump represents more of a throwback white heterosexual 1950s Hugh Hefner masculinity. His tough guy performance is much more conservative and traditional. It's interesting though, because like, I think that I don't know. I'm struggling with like the idea of like pitting these two types of masculinities together. Cause I think that Trump, I think there's much more to that than just like why people voted for Trump in 2016 and why they will vote for him again today. I think masculinity does play a lot into it. And I think that they, like a lot of people, want that kind of strong man persona. At the same time though, like, I think that there's kind of like a universal understanding that Donald Trump is not a good person. Like even his like people that like him, I think deep down in their head is like, yeah, he's kind of an asshole. And I just want him to be kind of my asshole. Like that's like the main thing with him specifically, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a meme that goes around always when this happens. And, you know, I've seen it with Brexit. I've seen it with what's going on in Alberta right now. And it's always like people who vote for the leopard eating faces party say, you know, but I didn't expect them to eat my face. Yeah, right.
That's exactly.
And it's like, you know, I bet, you know, there's certain people that who voted for him is like, yeah, I want him to be my swinging dick. As long as he doesn't hit me, you know? And then, yeah. and then inevitably, because he's just so bad at his job, it affects everyone, even the people who vote for him. And that's, I think, part of the most disheartening things is there are lots of people who are actually voting against their own interests and they think that they're not.
Yeah. Right? That's exactly it. They don't think that they are. Yeah.
And it just sucks because, and then you add on the wrinkle of like, you know, QAnon and all these kinds of things. And it becomes incredibly difficult to have a substantive conversation about what are we even talking about?
Yeah. And I worry about this like simplistic take of like saying that presidential races are always about gender. I think they are part of it is about gender. I think that their identity is definitely plays a lot into it. Right. Like, that's why when I also think about like, oh, Hillary Clinton lost because she was a woman. I was like, nah. Not the whole time. Like, I think there's a part of it there.
Well, that's the risk that I think, you know, us within social justice have to always grapple with. And we see this at Next Gen Men as well too, you know, and I'll admit my own naivety around this. When we started our Equity Leaders initiative, which is kind of our workplace facing things, we started talking about this as being like Next Gen Men's diversity and inclusion work. And like, the more I'm in that space, the more I realize that the solutions are as diverse as the problems themselves.
Absolutely.
And the one thing that we can do uniquely well is engage men in male-dominated industries to be better champions and engaged in gender equity, and then leverage that into broader diversity and inclusion initiatives. But like when it comes to like truth and reconciliation or accessibility or those kinds of things. All that I can say to that is, yeah, I care about it. Like, we should do it, but I don't come from those communities, so I don't know exactly what we should be doing. So that's kind of the same thing as this. And, you know, I would classify this work and Modern Manhood podcast, all that stuff, as anti-patriarchal. That's the work that we're trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can't extrapolate that from being anti-racist or, you know, from other sorts of allyship with LGBTQ communities and all these other things. Like, it's just, it can never be the one thing. And that's why intersectionality is such an important part and not some wonky academic thing, which is another Canadian political thing that came up.
Direct quote from our premier. That is, I think, is the one thing that really opened my eyes in regards to when the more I delved into this idea of gender, it was like I came out when a weird like as anybody does, right? They create kind of a hypothesis and they say, okay, well, you know what, gender is affects everything, and then you're like, then you start seeing it a little bit more, and then you start realizing, well, it affects a lot of things. There's also other things that affect it too. Like when you start thinking about education, for example, I'm on a big education kick right now. Our man is talking about education in the last two episodes.
A former teacher on an education kick? I am surprised.
I know. A shocking revelation. But at the same time, like when you think about education, there's like, oh no, education has, there's so many different complexities revolve around how we teach children. And it's not just gender, but gender plays a big role into it. It is a lot to do with financial disability. Like I was listening to a wonderful podcast from New York Times called Nice White Parents, which talks about integration in the New York school systems.
That's fascinating podcast series.
Really, really good. Really well done. And you know, it talks like how complex that actually is. And also not only that, how long people have been trying to work on this. And it's the same thing with gender. It's like when people think about the masculinity sphere, you think, well, there's a lot of like pro-feminist masculinity people are trying to do transformative work in their own way. And they see it maybe 5-10 years and you're like, no, it's been decades and decades. And not even that, maybe almost a century. Like it's been such a, like trying to figure out what gender is has been such a long journey. And because it is so complex. And so you do go into these kind of like, go up and down, you go up and down as to what makes an actual institution. And it's not just gender, but gender plays a big part into it. So I'm very curious about like how Katz puts into this idea that presidential races are always about gender. And I was like, yes and no. Like, it's, I mean, a little bit of both, right?
Yes and. They're like the... We could just as easily say presidential races in America are always about white supremacy, right? Mm-hmm. And like when Barack was on the ticket, it was definitely about white supremacy. And even beyond that, it was about white supremacy. Like, are we going to swing back to that or are we going to move beyond it? And... yeah, I don't know. It all plays a role. And I mean, here's the thing. I'll do a little teaser here. And you've read this article. People might know if they listen to Modern Man Pod that Next Gen Men just finished our crowdfunding campaign for the future of masculinity. We were 126% funded. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah, so good. So good.
But I had the privilege of writing the article, What is Masculinity? And I'll fully admit, I thrashed so hard to put, you know, pen to paper, even though I was typing, on this because it's such a big question. And I'll tell you the first sentence of it. Masculinity is a performance, masculinity is a relational, and masculinities are plural. Right. And and that's where the article stops. It was only six words. But but that's the reality of it, right? It's we cannot distill it down to any one thing. It is so variable based on, you know, I'm sitting here in Vancouver, you're sitting in Edmonton, you know, you come from a Chilean background, I come from a Czech background. you know, we are based on our relationships with our partners, based on our education, based on our professional histories, based on our incomes, based on, you know, all these things. And once you add all those things up, your masculinity is uniquely different than my masculinity.
Absolutely.
It is not just masculinity. It is gender. It is economics. It is education. It is all of those things.
It's culture. It's ethical. It's values. Like, it's 100%. Such a big thing, right? Yeah, yeah. 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 And it's interesting you say that, because I am also looking at an article from Slate, because they Katz talks about Joe Biden as well too, how his type of masculinity and the idea of about that picture that came out online about him kissing his son Hunter. And you know, Hunter's been around the news for, I don't know, bullshit conspiracy nonsense. But at the same time, like, there was a picture being like mocking some conservative contrarian was mocking him for kissing his son. And this, it's interesting because I specifically talked about this on a podcast I did with Michael Hingston way back in the day, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. 4 years ago, I think, when I first started Modern Manhood, and Michael Hingston talked about Joe Biden and his son. So he specifically kissing his son. And I remember speaking about this being like, yeah, I kiss my dad all the time. It's just, it's kind of a cultural thing. Like, this is not something that is brand new to me.
You're Latino. Yeah. You go to South America and you're confused. Do we kiss twice? Do we kiss three times? Yeah. Like, it's cultural.
It is. It's like, very cultural. Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that is really gets caught up into this whole idea of like, because it is like homophobic for sure. To when people are saying like, oh, I can't believe that you're like, this is an appropriate father-son interaction to you. That was the tweet about it. And this tweet was panned by thousands, but you know, like, you know, our friends at Men's Lib posted this up on their Reddit community. And I'm just trolling through the comments here. By the way, you got 2,800 upvotes. So it was an article saying like, why is it so hard for men to look at Joe Biden kissing his son? And so a lot of comments on it. And one of them said, from our good friend, take it to our circle jerk, or as he's known in Slack, Mr. Tits. he says, you know, what's interesting to me about this, how extremely American it is. Like, try to find a single Frenchman who hasn't kissed his son. It's not about looking gay necessarily. I don't think that's a part of it. It's more of a posturing about who's strong and who is weak. And I think that is the idea of what is strong and what is weak, I think really fits into how we look at politicians, for example, how we look at our role models, how we look at, and it doesn't have to be male or female or any type of gender in general. It's just like, who is playing the strongest masculinity. And I think that's the idea I think that Katz is leaning toward from what I'm reading his comments, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, the question is, it's in the eye of the beholder, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
You know, wherever you sit and what your understanding of masculinity is. And, you know, this has come up with Trump over the years. And I get it. I get why, you know, you don't want to participate in our viewing party of this, this documentary on November 2nd within the NGM yeah. Circle community. Totally fine, because it's exhausting where people are like shocked. And it's yeah. like, you know, like, no, this is the guy who, you know, the tape came out during his election of like, you know, grabbing women by the pussy and getting away with it. Right. And that was shock. And then now 4 years later, I'm just not shocked.
Yeah. Like, it's numbing now.
and the taxes, you know, oh, yeah. this will sway voters. And it's like, no, because people want to evade taxes. Like, literally, they're probably like, oh shit, I need his accountant.
Right? Yeah. Like, seriously. Like, so, everyone hates the tax people. Everyone hates the CRA here. Everyone hates the IRS. Like, of course, it's not going to help them. I mean, it's not going to hurt them. It's just, I think to me, I'm just tired of the idea of thinking as like putting a lot of sway into what Trump does as the idea of masculinity in America. I think there's going to be made a lot of books, a lot of movies, a lot of things going to be written and told about the 2016 election and whatever happens in a week from now about the 2020 election. as to why Trump became a president. And I think using masculinity as a lens is useful, but it's only useful so far. And it's only useful until a certain extent, until we start thinking about things like financially, economically, culture, you know, and also race. Like, there's a lot of things that are baked into this idea of, so why Trump won. Do you know what I mean? And also like election things too, like the whole, like, he didn't win the popular vote, but there's obviously, that's tied into it too. Like, there's a lot of things tied into it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like the systemic piece of it as well too, around the state of democracy in America. But
exactly.
Like, my buddies and I were actually just texting about this because I don't know if you saw this, but Joe Rogan had Mr. Kanye West on his podcast.
I was like, I don't want any part of that.
it's probably, you know, early returns are that it's probably what you would imagine it to be. Mm-hmm. And you know, my buddies and I were texting about this, and I just said to them, you know, they were doing a pulse check on Kanye. Like, are we empathetic for his mental health struggles? Do we think he's a genius? Do we think that, you know, we're tuned out? Like, they were like, what do we think? Right. And I just said, I think that Kanye, Trump, and to some extent, Joe Rogan is, all of them are a product of this, it feels like, uniquely American thing where they conflate competency, or they conflate celebrity with competency.
Right.
And very well, they may be competent in one arena, but they then allow these people to posture and transfer it to other arenas, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it's very few and far between that actually show that they can be competent in those things, right?
Like, absolutely.
You know, absolutely. Elon Musk, to some extent, you know, he does electric cars really well. He does rockets really well. And that's, like, pretty cool. But then we're also like, yeah, he's got the Neuralink and the Boring Company. And you know what? His opinion matters on anything and everything. And it's like, no, not really.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, like, you can do an amazing electric car. The Tesla is an amazing electric car. I don't want your opinion on politics, Elon Musk. Like, I feel like you have a specific bias and there's something there. Same thing with Kanye West. Like, I really think he's an amazing artist. I think as an artist, I think Kanye West is one of the artists that we will look in our 20th century, 21st century and see, was like, wow, this is a person that really shaped how we view music and how we view fashion as well too, with his sneakers and just the way he does things. I don't want his opinion on politics. Like, I also understand that he has gone through a lot of trauma, and also understand that he has noted himself that he's bipolar. Like, I there is this idea of, like, the cult of the celebrity. And it has influenced the way that American and Canadian and any type of Western, quote unquote, Western democracy has been shaped. So I think Trump really plays into that. Canadians are not immune to this. Like, I think a lot of countries are not immune to this. And I think it would be really naive to say that we're immune to this. And I mean, like, you can say Justin Trudeau also kind of fits into that cult of personality right?
I would debate that a little bit though, because, like, Trudeau wasn't like an actor or a musician or something like that. Like, he was the son of a politician in the prime minister's office. And, you know, I think, you know, he's not the be all end all, but
it growing did play up, into his like, yeah, popularity, but, though, right? Like, he's a good-looking guy that came from a group political dynasty, like, and to became the face of, like, the Liberal Party. Like, I'm not saying that Justin Trudeau is equal to Trump. There's no, it's not the argument I'm making. I'm just making like the idea that that people are really brought into this thought that if you are known in the world, then you must be smart. And sometimes I struggle with that sometimes. And I think Justin Trudeau is an example of that, because he is a known commodity. You know what I mean?
And let's be real. There are so many people that are absolutely brilliant in their fields, right? Like, scientists and, you know, academics and, you know, the person who runs their little, you know, pottery shop that, you know, makes a few thousand dollars a month, but it's right. brilliant pottery, right? Like, and like, you can be brilliant, but that just doesn't mean it always transfers. And yeah. and there just seems to be this disconnect where people believe that it does, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, last thing before we move on, give me a prediction. What do you think is going to happen in November 3rd? I mean, I guess for a week from November 3rd when we'll get all the results.
Yeah. I'm generally an optimistic person, but I think I've surprised a lot of my friends in that I've actually been quite pessimistic with all of this. I do think that Biden will win the election. I just very much worry about, you know, if it's even within 5 percentage points on November 3rd.
Wow, that close, eh?
Well, I'm just saying if it is, yeah. Trump will be motivated to say, actually, they stole the election.
Oh, yeah, right? 100%.
Because he's been sowing those seeds. And then you have the militias across, you know, the states in Oregon and Michigan. Michigan, they wanted to freaking kidnap the governor, right?
No.
Like, you know? And they didn't call them terrorists until like people were like, no, this is terrorism.
Yeah.
And, you know, like those people have so much permission now. You know, he literally told the Proud Boys to stand by. Right. Yeah. And so he's going to be motivated to sow, you know, the seeds of doubt that it was stolen. Like, and if that happens, there's going to be skirmishes and there's going to be violence. I don't think we'll have, you know, a civil war. I would love to be proven wrong on that front. Mm-hmm. But like, this is the tough part, is if that comes to play, it'll be on the Republican Party to say, no, we disavow you. We lost this. However, those people are so weak and have no backbones. And we've seen that over the last four mm-hmm. years that mm-hmm. I have little faith in that. So for it to be a decent outcome, like Joe has to win by like 10.
A landslide, an absolute
November
landslide.
November 3rd. Yeah. And you just can't overcome that. But like, it's stressful. I'm worried.
Yeah, no, I think I'm with you there. I think it's going to be closer than people think it will be. I don't think it's going to be a landslide. I think that there is that his base is very, very strong saying that they're going to vote Trump no matter what he does. And his basis, I think, is bigger than I think we take for it. The high, you know, people like the 60% of people like trying to vote is, I think, is amazing. And I think that might go left. Usually it does when like higher voter percentage goes up, left meaning Democrats. At the same time though, I think we're in for a run here. I think if it's not a landslide, this is going to go until January. This is going to go into like the courts. This is going to go into like this weird. He's going
to
go into.
And they just rushed the Supreme Court. You know,
exactly.
Amy Coney Barrett in and like this is the systemic thing. Like that, Trump is not the problem, right? Trump is a product of the problem.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
You know what the hell is going to happen if, like, in a dream world for us, you know, lefties. Is that, you know, it is a landslide and they lose the White House, or sorry, they being Republicans lose the White House, they lose the Senate, they lose the House, right? And you're like, yes, you know, we can undo a lot of the bad that has happened. Literally, all the Republicans have to do is obfuscate, get things to the Supreme Court, and it's lifetime appointments and we're mm-hmm. just screwed, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. like, it's lose-lose. I don't know, like...
It'll be tough. It'll be tough in America for a long, long time. And I totally agree with that. And I think that's it. Like I said, his legacy, Trump's legacy, is going to stay in the U.S. for decades. And I think that's going to be the main problem in the U.S. So, yeah.
And I like, in a dream world, I would love if Biden was like, hey, Barack, I need you. You need to be my foreign secretary. Like, you just need to go around the world again and like, be like, hey, our bad. We're so sorry. Like,
yeah, well, he does. Oh, yeah, Obama, I think, sometimes needs to. I think there's going to be some, I'm very curious as to what's going to happen with the leftist movement in the US, especially with the rise of like Bernie Sanders and the rise of like Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar.
She's great. I have a huge crush on her.
Yeah, like, she's fantastic. Yeah, she's fantastic. And I think that there is some mending to do, at least with like the very progressive left. And also there's some there's still this fire going on with like the Proud Boys and the QAnon supporters. There's going to be that fire there. So there's going to be some mending to do. And I think that I'm worried what that mending is going to look like. So I think that'll be, we'll see. We'll see. I guess the next cold takes I could ask Veronica when he comes in. Yeah. But anyways, we're going to take a break. On the part two, we're going to talk about probably something that we're both going to be really happy to talk about, our new favorite show. So stick around for that. This episode of Modern Manhood is brought to you by the Calgary Foundation. Whether it's funding anti-racism programs, addiction recovery, or food hampers for the hungry, for 65 years, the Calgary Foundation has proudly supported the charitable community to address some of Calgary's biggest challenges. Now, during this period of unprecedented urgent needs, Calgary Foundation renewed its commitment to building a healthy, vibrant, giving, caring, and resilient community. If you're a registered charity looking for a grant, professional advisor, creating a giving plan for your client, or a donor waiting to give back to your community, discover a wealth of resources at calgaryfoundation.org or learn more about their work through Calgary Foundation's Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. This episode is also brought to you by Unbelts, the Edmonton based biz that makes the comfiest stretch belts around. I have not had an Unbelts belt. I'll tell you what I have later on, because Unbelts also makes cloth masks, and we're going to need more of those. This thing's not going away soon. I have a ton of masks already. So whether you're heading back to school or just living in a city that requires masks indoors or in the bus, Unbelt masks are designed for serious perfectionists. The mask allows for the latest, the WHO guidelines. They're ethically made right down to their very components. But most importantly, they're super comfortable. And even if you have to wear them all day, I'm going to tell you right now, I have an Unbelt mask. I have two Unbelt masks, and they are fantastic. They go over the top of my head. Jake, do you have ones that go around your ear? Do you have one that goes like over your head kind of mask? What do you have?
I got new ones recently with like the stretchy like over ear ones.
Yeah.
And it's got a slot for a filter in it.
Nice. Nice. Do you have a big head problem like I do? Do you have like big head issues?
Oh, I got a huge head problem.
Yeah. So that's my issue, because they go around the ears and they hurt my ears, and it's not the funnest thing. But I'll tell you this much, Unbelt hat doesn't do the ear thing. They do like the overhead thing, which is like the best. I think it's like, because they can also like hang over, like just over your chin, and you can just put them back in and put them back out, and you don't need to like mess around too much. I love that. I love Unbelts. I think they're a great, fantastic company. Keep doing that. They come in all sorts of colors and four sizes, from preschooler to adult, extra large. I'm pretty sure I have an extra large, and it's fantastic. I have a huge head. They've also been featured in Parents Magazine's Elle Canada, and they were named the best in Edmonton. And guess what? Unbelts is a certified B Corporation, which means their business is all about giving back. So all September long, well, it's past, every mask and kids mask that they sold, they were going to give a mask to a Alberta school in need. So good for you, Unbelts. So what are you waiting for? Head to unbelts.ca, order your mask today. And if you're an Alberta teacher, you get a teacher discount. Go to their homepage, you get 20% off your entire order. That's unbelts.ca. I was just looking at the soccer scores and just like, ugh, my fantasy team is just crap today. So that's okay. Still got one more day.
Hold on. Werder Bremen tied. Damn it.
Are you a Werder Bremen fan?
Yeah, I lived in Bremen.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's really funny. Yeah. I am. I'm playing, what's it called? Football Manager. And I'm playing with Dortmund. As a team, and so I get to see like the Bundesliga, all the Bundesliga teams. So I'm like, oh yeah, it's Werder Bremen. They're a good team. Usually kick their ass, but that's okay.
I don't know. We'll see. Because last year they just dodged relegation. So you know, this year they're, I don't know, it looks like they're towards the high end of the table, but we'll see.
Yeah. So this is a good segue. We're going to talk about soccer. Are you ready for a soccer conversation?
Football.
Football.
We're talking about football.
Footy. Footy is the right way. No, football's good. Because you were talking to me about this show, and I've actually, like, you were, I think, maybe like the 10th person that I've heard online to say, like, you should watch this show. This show is really good. We're talking about Ted Lasso. It's on Apple Plus TV. And recently I got a work phone, and because it was an iPhone, they're just like, hey, you get Apple TV Plus for like a year. I'm like, oh, sweet. Finally get to check out the show. And you told me this on our Basecamp channel, and you're like, hey, I've been watching Ted Lasso and it's really good. Everyone should be watching Ted Lasso. And I've heard as well, I follow this podcast called The Watch from The Ringer, and it's just a TV show podcast, and they have like a Facebook group, and all this Facebook group was just like, guys, Ted Lasso is really good. Like, hey, just finished episode 7 and I cried. It's so good. Like, that's all I heard for a good like month, being like, everyone should be watching Ted Lasso. I don't know what you're doing. So I finally got to watch it this week. Like, and I have been burning through the episode. I have one more episode left. I haven't watched the finale, the end of it. So don't tell me what happens in the end. I have an idea of what happens in the end, but don't tell me what happens. But it's so good. It's such a good show. Tell me what you think of Ted Lasso.
Oh, it's so good. Sheena and I, obviously, you know, pandemic and physically distancing from people, we've been watching a lot of TV, way more than we normally would. It's actually funny because not long before the pandemic, we bought a new couch and we bought a TV. And like, you know, early like springtime when it was like really locked down, we were both just like, thank goodness for this couch and this TV.
Yeah, no kidding, eh?
But like, we watched stuff like The Wire, and mm-hmm. and then we watched Letterkenny and you know, all these shows. And then, you know, similarly, I think we got a new Apple product, and it was like, you know, 1 year of Apple TV, and there wasn't a lot on there to begin with. But then, you know, this Ted Lasso thing came on, and I was like, I don't know, let's try it. And it was great, like from episode one. And we got on it, you know, I'm not trying to say we're ahead of the curve here, but
like, you're day oneers.
Yeah. But I mean, like nowadays Netflix is dropping whole seasons all at once. Right. Yeah, so totally. You can marathon this. We watched it when there was only 3 episodes available. So of course we burned through those 3 episodes, and then we're like, what? We have to wait every Friday? What? But it was actually really nice through all of this, you know, 2020, to like have something to look forward to.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's how I felt about the Last Dance. When the Michael Jordan documentary came out, cause it was like a week to week basis. I was like, oh, this is good. I remember when it came out, I think it was like on Thursday or Friday. I don't remember. Anyways, like I remember being like excited to be like, oh yeah, it's Friday. I get to watch another Last Dance episode. It was the same thing with The Boys. When The Boys came out in Amazon, that came out like every Friday, and I was like excited to watch another episode of The Boys. So yeah, it's interesting how that has been a thing in streaming now, and I kind of like it. Yeah. I don't mind it too. It's good. It's good to have.
Do you know the origins of Ted Lasso?
I do. Now I do. I was just reading up on it. It was this NBC commercial, right?
Yeah, NBC acquired the American streaming rights for the English Premier League. And so they came up with a funny skit, which is hilarious because it's Jason Sudeikis. And I don't know if you noticed that the assistant coach is also the same character.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's like, yeah, it makes sense.
and
they just have the same jokes, actually, I noticed too on the like the first episode. Bit, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and the funny premise of the entire show, for anyone listening to this podcast, is that it is an American football coach, right, with quarterbacks and wide receivers and all that stuff, going to the UK to coach football, which we know is played with your feet there, and just kind of the humor, I guess, that those two sports are called football in their respective countries. and all the hilarity that ensues from that, where, you know, he doesn't understand the score. He doesn't understand where they should be on the field and all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
But I think really what you and I are both very keen on, and this kind of relates to the earlier conversation even about Trump, is he's a coach in the sense of not necessarily the X's and O's. You know, he leaves that to someone else, but he's a leader. He can motivate you. He can like know who you are and like elevate your game, whatever it is. And it's a really heartwarming show.
It's very heartwarming. And I think that's one of the things that I really, really loved about it, because, you know, when you watch any type of TV or any type of like shows in general, like they are very, I don't want to say cynical, but they have a little bit of an edge, right? And I think that's any type of like program, even if it's funny, there's a little bit of like realism that you're like, okay, yeah, there's, it pulls you back into reality, being like, oh yes, we're still dealing with like issues of racism and issues of like virus going on or whatever. There's some sort of like bigger topic. Like we just finished, like we went through Fleabag because we didn't ever watch Fleabag. So like Virginia and I went through Fleabag, and it's got a little bit of an edge to it. It's a funny show, but it's got a little bit of an edge, and I really liked it still. Ted Lasso has no edge.
Like the biggest tension is like, you know, will they get relegated or not?
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
The one thing I will say, but it, you know, not to like be spoilers or whatever, but like, you know, his part of the reason why he even goes over to the UK is because his marriage back home is crumbling.
Yeah. Right?
And, but like, it's again, that could be like a really, intense thing. Right. Especially like that's how it usually plays out in media, of like vicious divorces. And when you watch this Ted Lasso character go through it, like your heart just breaks for him. And
absolutely.
And you see how good of a dad he is, and you know, how basically it's just a relationship that ran its course. And so there is no edge, like you said, it's just real.
Yeah. It's very, it tugs at your heartstrings, and it's very, heartwarming, and it's very empathetic. And it's nice to see a character being played where he is just Ted Lasso himself, and even the rest of the characters, the coaches, I would say, like Coach Beard and Nate, being kind of like, they have their own arc, but also like, it's just nice to see somebody just being genuinely, authentically nice. Like, and it's not, you can tell his character comes from a place of genuine empathy and genuine curiosity, where he talks about an episode, he talks about being curious as a form of curing cynicism, and like being you know, and just being evil in general. Like it's such a blessing to have a show where you can come to it and it feels like a warm hug, and it feels like it's like a show that's not, you know, trying to like play with you. It's just trying to say, hey, you know, we're here, we're good, we're in a comfortable space. You're free to laugh and you're free to feel, and yeah, like a complete difference. Like, and obviously, this is a masculinity podcast. Like a complete type of masculinity that Ted Lasso plays, with everybody else, and I really love it.
Well, it flips it, right? Like,
yeah,
he's basically nice guys finish first, right?
Yeah, and exactly.
And we're so used to the nice guys finish last plot line, and you know, there's some cold-hearted people in the show, whether it be the owner of the team or the crotchety captain or like the superstar. And then like this show leads with the coach who's got the heart of gold, and he's just melting all of these icy people. And it's refreshing, right? Because it's the opposite of the Trump of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly it. It's very much the nice guys finish first. And I really love the arcs, even just like the women play in the show as well too, like the other owner. I think they like the guy owner is probably the worst character on the show. And he is a genuine like asshole and like just spiteful person. But the other people, like the crotchety captain, like the superstar playboy, have their arcs where it's like they, you can see their humanity. You can see why they are like this, and you can see how complex it is for them to have these kind of emotions and have feelings. And you feel that really, none of these characters are being played for like cheap gags either too. Even just like Nate, his own little insecurity are played for, okay, this is a reason why this happens. Right. Like, no. I don't know. I'm a big fan.
and then, you know, then there's even like a Danny Rojas who just has relentless positivity, relentless energy. And you're just like, who is this lovable buffoon, right? Yeah,
exactly, right? And then you have like a player like Sam, who's like Nigerian, and who's like, he is just wanting to be more positive, but it's also like just like a normal fellow. I don't know. And I think that like even just the culture in England, it's played out pretty funnily. Like going to the pub and having people yell wanker at you is really good. and it's just like, I like having a show where you're like, I really want these people to win. Like, I really just want them to do well in their life, whatever that means. I don't want anything bad to happen to any of them, even like the playboy, except for the owner. The owner, I think, just wants, I really hope that he gets his comeuppance. But like, that's it, right? Like, that's the only person that I'm just like, everyone, I just want them to be better.
Yeah, it's perfectly timed, and you know, going back to the gender piece with the two lead female characters, like it passes the Bechdel test, right? They have a complex relationship, supporting one another that doesn't relate to the boys on the team, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and I love that there is kind of this idea that they're both seen as intimidating in different ways, and they're also both seen as there's reasons why that is, and also like that they can be both, that there's no like a mean girl like a thing that usually happens sometimes with like two female characters in like in power positions, that both are in their own way, they're both trying to like pull themselves up, and when they disappoint each other, you can sense that you're like, wow, I disappointed you. Like, that's a big deal. Like, and I love that part of it too, right? And you can sense even with like the male characters that they're not in competition with each other. They're just trying to coexist, which is, I don't know. It's funny because you're like, when we're talking about the show, and if you haven't seen it, you're probably going to go into it being like, wow, this is a really like complex comedy show that like, it's not. It's a very kind of cheesy show at some most times. It's just so different than what I'm noticing, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I think that it lies in that difference. It sounds the way we're, you know, dismantling it, it sounds very highbrow or whatever.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's cheap laughs. But you know, I think one thing that I've been thinking a lot about, especially, you know, with the type of work that we do in workplaces and stuff like that. And I think about, we were in this construction company, and one of the project managers was like, you know, can we not have jokes at work anymore? And I said, sure you can, but at what cost or at whose expense, right?
Yeah.
And this is within the show, like nobody's the butt of the joke. Right. No. And if it is the butt of the joke, it's shown
as something bad. It's shown as something that like, if somebody is the butt of the joke, it's showing as that, like, we need to repair this, right? Like, this is not like, somebody can't be the butt of the joke unless they really, really, really deserve it. But even then, there's still a sense of like a light of like, hold on, we need to repair this. And I love that. And I love that go on.
Ted Lasso, right? Like if anyone is the butt of the joke, it's this American guy in the UK, right? He's the butt of the joke because he also puts himself there, right? Like he, every time someone offers him tea, he's like, what is this dirty brown water, right? Yeah. Like, you know, but it's not to do with anyone's gender or race or sexuality. Like nobody, there's no no, like you said, they're really just trying to coexist. There's no hierarchy or posturing going on. And that's really refreshing, I think.
Yeah, totally, totally. And the reason why I wanted to talk about Ted Lasso, like I said, it was very much in contrast to what's going on with Trump in general and what we see kind of like this idea of masculinity. But also like this idea of like masculinity as a leader, right? Like how do we be a leader? How do we be a person that is wanting to do well and kind of inspire people, but without having to, use this kind of toxic ways that sometimes men do in trying to like punch somebody down or like make fun of them, especially in a locker room. And, you know, Ted Lasso is about a locker room culture. And it's interesting to see how that specific type of masculinity that Ted plays is played not only at the start for kind of laughs that they try to steamroll him a bit, but he ends up steamrolling the team just in regards to the type of positivity that he plays. Like even the rest of the fans are just like relentlessly pounding on him, just telling him he's a terrible manager. He's just kind of like water off a duck kind of thing. And so he kind of like, I love this idea of being a leader in a way that is empathetic and that is caring about everybody else and also wanting to win too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, we can continue our meta highbrow critique here. Like part of it, I think, as well is based on some of the politics that we're seeing happen on mm-hmm. progressive circles right now, where the left eats the left alive and like we're doing this purity thing and whatnot versus like leading with love, leading with warmth, leading with, you know, wanting to build each other up no matter what. Right. And it's like, it's this constant critique of like, you know, you're advancing on this one side, but you're not doing enough here and all these kinds of things. And so you just see this person who is just warm and wants to make the world a better place. And people see that and know that about him. And I think, you know, based on the work that we do, I think that we kind of just wish that was the case as well too, where we could just mm-hmm. lead with love on all fronts and have those successes that he's seeing.
There is definitely a lesson learned to be saying in regards to solidarity as well too, like in a sense of that we can have people going, pulling along the same goal. They might have different ambitions. They might have different ideas as to why we're doing this. But sometimes we lose out as to, you know, like if somebody's pulling the same place that you are, they're your teammate. They're not your enemy. They're not somebody that is going against you. They might have different ideas than you, but they're still your teammate. And you still want to play with them in a way that we're going towards a common goal together. And I think that like, you know, sometimes I the sports metaphors get overplayed a bunch, especially when we talk about like sins of leadership and stuff like that. And because it's way more complex than like the real world and specifically around with like social justice movements or political movements or in general than just like X's and O's in sports, which is, you know, much more easier to say, you go here and we'll win. At the same time, understanding that face-to-face you have a teammate on with you can have a discussion as to how we're going to play together. You still say like, you're my teammate. We're going together. We're going to do this together still. Like, and I think that is important. I think you're right. Like there's a sense of like the left eats the left a lot. I think there's a lot of discussions to be had in between each other. At the same time, you can both say, we're going to pull this together, right? We're going to have this idea. We're going to be solid together, right?
Yeah. And again, digging into the overused metaphors, sports metaphors, we all have a role to play, right? We have different positions and we all need to advance towards that same goal, right? And, you know, there's people working on truth and reconciliation. There's people championing Black Lives Matter. There's people, you know, tackling toxic masculinity and all that work needs to be done in order for us to get to a goal of a society that, you know, values all people and loves all people and those kinds of things. And so, mm-hmm. You know, there's no sense in bickering between those different positions when we're all trying to work towards that same goal.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, I mean, like the last thing I want to say is just go check out Ted Lasso. I mean, like it's on Apple TV. You can probably get a 7-day trial. I'm not getting paid by Apple, by the way. I wish probably get paid by Apple, but we're not getting paid.
They have a lot of money to throw around. I know. What are they, a $2 trillion company?
You really should. So yes, if you're from Apple, you want to sponsor us, you go right ahead. My DMs are open is what they'll say. Saying that though, like you probably get a 7-day trial off Apple TV Plus. You could probably kill Ted Lasso in like 2 days. They're 30-minute episodes, 10 episodes. You could easily make that happen in a weekend. So just letting you know, it's a great show. I think if you're like tired of like the world being so down, this is a good place to be like, okay, it's good like chicken soup TV. So anyways, that's all I wanted to say more about Ted Lasso. Jake, is there anything that you wanted to bring up before we wrap it up?
Let's see here. It's October 25th as we record this. I think that we're publishing this soon. So
yeah, we're publishing today.
Right. So if you happen to listen to this, October 28th is the next NGM Circle event, and it's on porn, masculinity, and feminism. Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, it's going to be hella spicy. So that'll be good. Looking ahead, I know that in November, I think our next topic is masculinity and substance abuse. It's Movember upcoming. So everyone, you know, pre-shave, get your mustaches ready to go. Yeah, I think that's all I got to plug today.
Yeah, I think that's all I got too. So make sure you go ahead, check out nextgenmen.ca if you want to support us. If you've already been a supporter of the Future Masculinity Zine, thank you so much for all your support. We were 110% funded, which is fantastic. So you'll get those coming up soon. If you want a toque, that's coming up soon. So look in the NextGenMen store. That's going to be in there soon as well. So yeah, make sure you check us out. And Jake, where can people find you?
We're at nextgenmen.ca, at nextgenmen on all the social media handles. That's where they should
be. That's about it. It's awesome.
Easy to find us. And thanks for having me, Herman. And,
no problem. Anytime.
I'm looking forward to.
Well, anytime Veronica's not working at school or whatever.
she can have the seat back next week, but she's not going to have a sweet rap air horn.
That's great. Is there other sounds on that, or was just that one? Is there a womp womp?
Oh, yeah. What else we got here? Dramatic.
Yeah, that's very dramatic.
And then hold on, the last one I'll give you to play myself out.
The Wilhelm scream. Beautiful, beautiful. What a way to end this episode. Everyone have a wonderful and safe week. We'll see you next time on Modern Manhood.